Thank you.
Yo, yeah.
And I have no relationships to disclose. Okay, just start to tell you a little bit about what the Network for Healthy California does. Our mission is to create innovative partnerships that empower low-income Californians to increase fruit and vegetable consumption, physical activity, and food security with the goal of preventing obesity and other diet-related chronic diseases. Since 97, we have led statewide, local, state, and national partners collectively working toward improving the health of 7 million low-income Californians. We use multiple venues, including homes, schools, work sites, and communities, to create environments supporting fruit and vegetable consumption and physical activity. And this includes 85 local programs, including primarily schools and local health departments, as well as some other agencies. I'm going to focus on our impact outcome projects, which our objective of this project is to identify successful interventions and potential best practices, and to provide our contractors with direction for program improvement, refinement, and redirection of effort. The participants in this project are any of our local partners that receive greater than $350,000 of federal funding, and a few smaller contractors participate in the project voluntarily. These projects are primarily schools and local health departments. Most of our contractors have very little evaluation training. They're often they're teachers, they may be MPHs, but again, they're not researchers by trade. So we at the state provide our contractors with evaluation tools and resources, and we give them one-on-one evaluation guidance. We also at the state conduct state-level analysis of compiled evaluation results so that the Network for Healthy California can take a look at overall project accomplishments. The problem, as embodied in this quote from one of our local project coordinators, is that individual contractors do not have the resources to develop or hire people with expertise in evaluation. Without the state support, the impact outcome evaluation process would be a great challenge and potential obstacle to contractors. But like I just mentioned, it's a requirement. So tools and resources that we provide for building their capacity to conduct evaluation. We have a number of them. We have offered workshops regionally throughout California. We have a website, an evaluation handbook, templates for creating evaluation plans, which they must submit each year, and reports, which they also submit each year, a compendium of surveys, which includes standardized surveys. I have provided some copies of our compendium of surveys in the back of the room. These are a couple of years old. We update these regularly. And these are extras that we had in our storeroom that that I thought that people might like to take. So these are outdated compendiums. They're not our most recent version, but we're not using them anymore. We don't need them. So you're welcome to take them and flip through them and use them as a reference as you wish. We also provide data entry templates, which I will give an example of in a few minutes, and an instruction document that goes along with that. We conduct planning teleconferences once a year and one-on-one technical assistance throughout the year. So we have an annual evaluation timeline that all of our contractors participate in. On July 31st, programs submit, using our templated forms that we provide, a report of the activities and results from the current year and a plan for the activities and evaluation of the upcoming year. From August to November, we conduct the planning teleconferences that I mentioned. These tend to be clustered pretty heavily in August and September because probably 80% or so of our contractors are school-based, so they like to begin their evaluations in September. maybe October. So these teleconferences include the program staff, someone from our research and evaluation team, their program manager at the state, and if it's a school-based program, a nutrition education consultant who we have a few of those that is assigned. They're assigned based on their location in the state, and they are very well versed in nutrition programs for schools. Programs are required to use one of our standardized surveys for based on their target population. We have three breakdowns for our populations that we use, youth in grades 3 through 8, who use our network youth survey, teens in grades 9 through 12, or adults. Additional measures are available and optional. We often encourage these optional measures to be used depending on the interests of the program. The one you see up at the top is an adult survey, and the one at the bottom is an excerpt from the network youth survey. The compendium of surveys, which again, you can take a copy from the back if you'd like, is updated every 1 to 2 years to provide contractors with the best measures we can find to evaluate their programs. The most recently updated version, which was updated about a year and a half ago, includes over 40 measurement tools. And we are currently working on an update, which will be released in March. This is an example of a data entry template. Don't worry about reading the details of it. I wanted to show as much of it as I could, so I realize it's tiny. What you see across the top are variable names, and the data that's filled in are rows for participants in an evaluation with their ID numbers. Those are unique ID numbers, but not identifiable for the individuals that are going down on the far left. And these are designed so that contractors without any training in data analysis can enter their data, and it produces a basic standardized analysis for them. And this is what their results look like. You can see up along the left, there's a list of variables. Again, I realize it's probably a little too small for you to read what they are. But you can see, for example, there's a list of healthy foods and beverages, milk, yogurt or cheese, cereal, vegetables, etc. They get a pre-test mean, a post-test mean, the mean difference from pre to post-test, and then a p-value. The p-values are computed based on a paired t-test. And we take advantage of the conditional formatting function in Excel to give them a red p-value when it's less than or equal to 0.05. That way, these contractors, who again are not researchers and aren't necessarily savvy enough off the top of their heads to remember, is it 0.05? What is that magic number? It turns red for them. And you know, after a few years of doing this, they tend to remember that 0.05, but it helps them just at a glance to find those significant results. The pre and the post-test means are calculated only for subjects with complete data, meaning there's both a pre-test and a post-test value that's been entered. So it automatically drops non-matched pairs. We do give them demographics for the entire sample, though. Now, we did want to know, are they using the tools that we give them? Because, you know, maybe they don't need them, or maybe they're not using them and they're just struggling on their own. So this summer, we sent out a survey via SurveyMonkey to ask our current participants in this project, as well as some that aren't participating anymore, either because they aren't required based on their funding, or they aren't one of our contractors any longer, or for whatever reason. We asked them about the various tools and resources, whether they're using them, whether they like them, various other questions. 28 folks responded to the survey, 27 of them completed it. We got responses from 5 former project coordinators, 23 who are currently working in impact outcome evaluation, and the 23 who are currently working in the project included project coordinators, staff, as well as a couple of evaluation subcontractors, because some of our programs do contract out some of the evaluation work. And these responses represented 25 different programs. We have in the 40s, depending on the year, somewhere between 42 and 45 programs. So these are the results to one of the first questions. Have you or your program ever used any of the following tools or resources? The most common response was the teleconference, which is a required thing that they participate in, so that was good that most of them said they had. I'm curious why a couple of them said they hadn't, but there's always error in research, so we'll chalk that up to error. A few people aren't using the compendium of surveys or the standardized survey tools. Again, at this point in time, the standardized survey tools are required, but a few years ago they weren't. So most likely the standardized survey tools, the people saying no to that, are our former project coordinators. What I thought was interesting was getting down here, because most of these are being pretty well used. Less than half of our contractors say that they're using our website. So for me, as the coordinator of this project, I thought that that means that there's some work I need to do with our website to make that a little more useful. So that's on my to-do list, is to figure out what's wrong with our website, or what's wrong with our marketing of our website. What do we need to do there? The other note is that there are multiple people working in these programs, and it could be that some of these numbers are underreported in terms of what everyone working in an individual project is using. The one person answering the survey might not know that some other person is using something. So they may be using these things, but they might not necessarily like them. I realize this graph is a little bit busy, but focus on the red in terms of these items being extremely useful. Or if you'd like, look at the red and the blue for extremely and very useful. So people really, really like the data entry templates, which doesn't really surprise me because I spend a lot of time making these things and providing technical assistance for them. They are very, very heavily used. They really like one-on-one technical assistance. They really like our compendium of surveys. They really like their teleconferences. It starts to fall off here around the training workshops, the standardized survey tools. We get some complaints about the surveys. Anything that you make standardized and you make 40, some people use them. Not everybody's going to like it. And again, down here, the website is not quite as popular. We have some work to do there. So just a few quotes from the survey. Over the years, the network team has listened and responded to my needs by standardizing the survey tool. Some people do like it. Providing data entry templates that are easy to use and produce immediate results. Standardizing protocols for survey administration, and by being available for a phone call or email to assist. The research and evaluation team has expanded the number of surveys available, including the Network High School survey. Teleconference with the research team has been useful in clarifying issues pertaining to impact outcome evaluation, such as barriers, design, implementation, and analysis. Okay, so a couple of years ago, we noticed that a lot of our projects had very small sample sizes. So this was one of our goals in recent years, was to make sure that our individual projects were able to really conduct a quality evaluation on an individual project level and find the results that they were looking for. It's really a challenge to get significant results, statistically significant results, even if you are making an impact with a small sample size. So you can see here, 2 years ago, we even had a project with a sample size of 6. We had That was an adult program. We had a child program with 24. And our median adult intervention, let's see, was 66, 100 for adults. We conducted a power analysis. And it looked like for the child survey, you needed at least 100 to find a good effect for our fruit and vegetable variables, and for adults, 75. So half of our programs were below that or more. So that became a priority for us. So in fiscal year 10, we started pushing our programs to increase their sample sizes. And in FFY 11, it became mandatory that our programs for adults had at least 75 and for children had at least 100, which is what our power analysis revealed. It's also about the most we felt like we could push them to, because a lot of these projects have a difficult time maintaining a matched sample from pre to post test. There's a lot of dropout in the projects. So through technical assistance, through the teleconference process, we provided them with a lot of suggestions on how to accomplish that, and we found a great deal of success. You can see the medians, the minimums went up dramatically. In this survey, we also asked asked our programs whether they're being challenged to do their best work over the years, and it does appear, looking at especially the extremely and very often, they do feel like they're being more challenged in recent years to do their best evaluation work. I'll just let you read this. This is sort of a long quote. The biggest challenge I think that we face in this program is meeting the different needs of different programs. I'll just read these two very quickly. The quote on the left, "From my perspective, I'm not challenged to do my best evaluation because of the need to fit into the prescribed framework. Like I said, I understand the need to collect a standard set of data across programs and years. I just think it's too bad that the standard set of data interferes with evaluation of program components that might be as or more meaningful to a specific district program. But on the right, why do we need to have so much autonomy? It would be easier if an intervention, evaluation, design, survey instrument, etc. was given to us. How do I manage both of these needs at the same time?" Another perspective, "It would be helpful if the state reviewed how schools and health departments differ in their approach to nutrition ed efforts. Many of the current forms and examples relate to students and school-based projects. It might be helpful to have health department local incentive awardees meet separately." It's a valid comment. Again, these are two completely different needs that are hard to meet at the same time. I'm almost done, yes. In fiscal year 12, We sample sizes have become mandatory. We have standard administration protocols for our network surveys that we have introduced. We will be resuming workshops after a year that we did not have them. And we will be incorporating new USDA guidance that we expect out in January 2012. As our program transitions from SNAP Ed to nutrition education for obesity prevention. And we will be also putting out a substantially revised compendium of surveys with lots of new measures. And we will be revising that website. There will be practical tools. Oh, I'm sorry. Just a quick summary. This is it.
Okay.
I promise. So practical tools and resources combined with training and ongoing technical assistance facilitate the process of local program evaluation, and supporting multi-site local program evaluation requires a balancing act of standardization and structure with sensitivity to the unique needs of local programs.